It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running once again, another live program. At one point, every program is live at some point, but let's not get lost in the weeds so early. This is the 24th day of January 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the Horn chat room during the hours in which this program is live. 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you do jump in with your own screen name and password, well, waiting for you at this point in time are Anatole and Otto, Squeaky and VT Blom, and of course you'll be capably moderated by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master here on a Northern California day when it's 66 degrees, And there are mosquitoes in the man cave. Well, by Jove, he's folded space to become man cave. You will also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve, from Georgia Stan. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Oh, mercy sakes alive. I tell you what, I'm off in the multi-floor of roses this evening with the thorns. And I have a feeling we're going to, well, there's no feed. Jesus, what a day. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, hot and true on both thorny streams. Thought for the day. The Clementine Caligula has agreed to postpone the State of the Union address until the conclusion of the government shutdown. He was overheard telling aides, "I'll give this one to Nancy Pelosi, or as I call her, Nancy. I'm so sick and tired of winning." I'll bet it. Yeah. It was a little bit after airtime last night, after we closed the program, that he folded like a cheap Trump brand suit made by some little 9-year-old chained to a table in China and said, "I won't give the State of the Union." Oh, he wants that. He wants that applause, but it's not going to be the kind of applause that he got the first couple of State of the Unions because, well, I guess he's only given one. He didn't give one his first year, did he? But there's not going to be nearly the stand, clap, hoot like a barn owl, stand, clap, hoot like a barn owl that he got because he's decidedly outnumbered in the House now and pretty evenly divided. But then again, maybe the one thing he wanted to see more than anything else was my senior senator from the state of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, leaping to his feet to clap wildly and look pretty much like a Bobby Soxer at an Elvis concert circa 1957 or something. Because Joe Manchin, of course, voted for the Republican reopening plan that would have completely rewritten the idea of asylum in this country had it passed. It didn't. Six Republicans defected to vote for the Democratic reopening plan. Only one Democrat, lonely old Joe, lickspittle Joe, useless as Tits on a Barn Door, Joe Manchin voted from among the Democrats for the Republican plan. But I'm getting ahead of myself because we have thanks to send out. We have four subscribers here on the 24th day of the month. We have four subscribers. So thanks go out to James, as well as to Samson, and Josh, and Pam out in Washington State. Thank you. Thank you all four for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep the program on the air each month and every month on the 24th of the month. If you'd like to be a subscriber on the 24th of the month, well, just run over. Or on the 25th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you'd like to be a subscriber, go over to headon.live, click on the PayPal button, and say make this, and when you do, say make this a recurring payment. We've sort of, me and that mouse in my pocket, no. Brother Deacon Asa has reworked the PayPal interface so that there are various buttons you can click, including have a show on me. Again, as I mentioned last night, invented several years ago by our buddy Ed, who said, okay, well, a $200 contribution is have a show on me. That means you're doing the heavy lifting for one individual program. And so there's now a button for that. Yes. Which brings me to the total we've got for the evening. And for the month, we can finish fundraising for the entire month of January, thanks to some heavy lifting that's been going on all month. It's a small group, but it's a dedicated group. We've got $466 to go to finish the month of January, which means that we're actually technically $266 behind, and then $200 for this evening's program. But we're at $466. If we can take that down, then we won't need a Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle, and it'll just be a lot of rollicking conversation come tomorrow. So that's where things stand relative to finishing up the month of January so we can have fundraising free radio for the rest of the month. Matt in San Francisco says, State of the Union? The State of the Union is closed. Fuck Trump. Well, yeah, I guess you're welcome to. I wouldn't even with yours, Matt. But, yeah, I mean, that's yeah. Reasonable minds can differ, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we find ourselves entering the program this evening. The country's a hot mess. And the breaking news as we come to air this evening is that, according to CNN, Julius Geezer has had drafted for him, and, I bet you money that the person doing the drafting was probably, Stephen Miller. But CNN claims to have gotten eyeballs on a draft national emergency statement. The massive amount of aliens who unlawfully enter the United States each day is a direct threat to the safety and security of our nation and constitutes a national emergency. Now, therefore, I, Donald J. Trump, by the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, including the National Emergencies Act, 50, University of Southern California, 1601, et seq. I don't know what that means. Hereby declare that a national emergency exists at the southern border of the United States. Right. So it's probably coming. And, by the way, this is more in the way of a program note. I've gotten a couple of notes saying, Bob, where have you been? There hasn't been a show posted to iTunes since December the 18th. Well, I've been here all along. But iTunes is a little bit glitchy. I don't even begin to know how that works. But the podcast, if you want, and saying this to somebody who hasn't been getting the program, and probably isn't getting this, might be, you know what I mean. But the best ways to get the podcast as opposed to listening to the program live is one of two ways. The first being the way it's always been, and that is to go to whiterosesociety.org/kincaid.html. In other words, go to whiterosesociety.org, scroll down, click on Bob Kincaid, and subscribe to the RSS feed. Whatever podcast app you use, it'll be there. I mean, even if you just want to listen through a regular browser, boom, it's there every night. It's usually posted within 30 minutes of the end of the program. So if you subscribe to the RSS feed with the podcast app, boom, it'll be right there. The other way is to go over to podbean.com and look for Bob Kincaid. And they're there every night, too. In fact, I go to Twitter and I go to Facebook every evening. If you follow me on Twitter, if you follow me on Facebook. And there's a direct link I post to Facebook and Twitter. Again, about 30 minutes after the program every evening. As far as I know, they're still going up at Stitcher. And they're still going up at TuneIn. And then, of course, there's always the rerun stream. That's where you get this program live every evening from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then just go to headon.live and the rerun and get the rerun stream going, and you'll pick up the program in medias res. And Brother Deacon Asa reminds me, each new podcast, including the five most recent, get posted at the bottom of headon.live each and every day. Well, that didn't take long. Thank you, Marty. Stop telling us how to listen to the horn, Bob. Well played, sir. Well played. Very well played, indeed. I want to reiterate something that I've been saying. And I think we should ponder it a little bit. And that is this. The continuing resolution that is keeping the parts of the government open that are open goes through September the 30th, 2019. That's my best understanding of the situation. If it's not, please correct me and I will adjust my thinking accordingly. This shutdown has gone on for 34 days. Yeah. And the cluelessness and insensitivity of the billionaire class is becoming clearer and clearer and clearer. But one of two things is going to happen. Maybe one of three things. National emergency, let the shutdown continue, or end the shutdown. It's possible end the shutdown may be a subset of national emergency. It's not entirely clear. Because the legislation still has to be passed that would, in fact, reopen the portions of the government that are presently closed. So with that in mind, something to consider. I'm just working from the Steve Bannon approach of trying to make government a complete disaster and make it all fall to pieces. Nothing would more thoroughly make things fall to pieces than to let this shutdown continue, through September 30th, and, oh, you know, long about late July, talk about, have him start talking about
Well, I'll just let the rest of the government shut down, too. We've got to have a wall, a big, beautiful steel slats wall.
And if we think it's bad now, what happens when the government shuts down on October 1st, 2019, and then it's the whole thing is a real horror? Not that this isn't. Not that this isn't. Like I said, the Marie Antoinetting of the billionaire class has become glaringly obvious. And I offer you Laura Trump, wife of Eric Trump, who said that, well, this is some short-term discomfort. That's pretty much how she described it. The exact quote, for those of us keeping track of such things. Well, according to her, in an interview with, well, let's just let her do it in her own words, shall we? Bold TV. Never heard of them. Ever. Oh, that sounds a hell of a lot like an ad. All right, we'll get this one way or another. Working. Wow, what a pain in the ass. So let's try this one more time.
It's not fair to you, and we all get that, but
now he's laughing
this
it up
is so
the
much
same
bigger.
Karen, and you used to call him Dillhole Devin, so that's...
Stupid ads. Now, the better to hear the wisdom, the sagacity of Laura Trump.
Listen, it's not fair to you, and we all get that, but this is so much bigger than any one person. It is a little bit of pain, but it's going to be for the future of our country, and their children and their grandchildren and generations after them will thank them for their sacrifice right now.
A little bit of pain. A little bit of pain. Let's say you're going through chemo for breast cancer, and you're making choices between paying for your chemo and making your mortgage payment. That's a reality. The woman has been interviewed repeatedly on television. And that's what Laura Trump thinks is a little bit of pain. She went on to say, I know it's hard. I know they have bills to pay. They have mortgages. They have rents that are due. But the president is trying every single day to come up with a good solution here. The reality is it's been something that has gone on for too long and been unaddressed. our immigration problem. If we do nothing right now, it's never going to get fixed. This is our one opportunity, which displays a stunning lack of anything resembling education in the realm of, say, logical reasoning. But, of course, she wasn't the onlyest one. Oh, no. Wilbur Ross. The guy who oversees the Department of the Executive Branch. In which 50,000 Coast Guard retirees are going to get trumped, otherwise known as being stiffed, on their retirements if the shutdown is not over by, I think, the 29th of this month. A lot of people have never heard of Wilbur Ross. A lot of people don't live in West Virginia. I do. You may recall a lot of years back, before the words upper big branch entered our vocabulary and consciousness, there was another mine disaster called Sago, S-A-G-O, and it was up in the central part of the state. It was an underground mine, and that mine blew up, and of 13 people trapped in that mine, only one emerged alive. That mine was owned by International Coal Group, ICG. International Coal Group was run by, why, you guessed it by now, Wilbur Ross. As Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross has gone hand over fist to save something on the order of 4,000 crummy coal jobs. 4,000 deadly coal jobs. If some of you caught the PBS documentary a couple of nights ago, you know that black lung is ravaging the underground mining community and the surface mining community like never before. The sooner we get rid of the coal industry altogether, the sooner people will have a better chance at staying alive. No one has ever died in the solar industry from breathing sun fumes. In the wind industry, no one has ever been killed because they were exposed to too much air. Wilbur Ross is a goddamn billionaire. Wilbur Ross lives way, 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 way up in some godforsaken tower in New York City. I guess maybe he's in D.C. now. But he has about as much of a relationship with ordinary, everyday, carrying the likes of Wilbur Ross on their backs, working Americans, as a hog does with, say, the Japanese tea ceremony. That is to say, none whatsoever. And so somebody booked Wilbur Ross on CNBC to talk about the shutdown. And boy, did he talk.
Workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because, as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed.
That's right. They're not getting paid the salaries that they're working for, or they're just furloughed and not working at all. But Wilbur, who has been the beneficiary of federal government corporate welfare for the better part of his miserable, benighted, revolting existence, Wilbur doesn't understand why they can't just go to the bank and take out a loan and pay interest on money they shouldn't be having to pay interest on. Just go to the bank and do it. I mean, it's federally guaranteed. No, it's not. Not until the government's, by God, reopened it isn't. But Wilbur just doesn't understand why they wouldn't go take out a loan like he does. Because every time Wilbur walks into a bank, they say, well, hello, Wilbur, would you like some money? Aren't you nice and white and rich? Here, we've just got a few bags of money laying around. Would you like somebody to carry that out to the limo for you, Wilbur? And Wilbur says, well, that would be mighty nice of you. Yet Wilbur doesn't understand. You know what? The people in the French Revolution who got that free ride in the tumbril, they didn't understand either. Now, whether it's probably apocryphal, but that phrase that is attributed to Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake. Well, the whole colloquy is as follows. Your Highness, the people are starving. They have no bread. They have no bread? Then let them eat cake. Because every day of Marie Antoinette's existence, there was always something. If you're out of bread, just eat cake. Yeah. I don't understand why they don't go and get a loan. Kind of reminds me of something John Kennedy said, too. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
So the 30 days of pay that some people will be out, there's no real reason why they shouldn't be able to get a loan against it.
Will you co-sign it, asshole? Was Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross offering to co-sign a whole bunch of small loans from banks and credit unions? Yeah, when this happened live and they cut back to Hallie Jackson over at MSNBC, I thought she was going to reach under the desk and pull out a bottle of Old Granddad and just start swigging from the bottle.
Michael, do you find that tone deaf or not?
Michael Steele, but you get the idea. And so late this afternoon, it became apparent, if anything, you know, ever does actually become apparent to Julius Geezer, that, he had one of those little moments where he takes question from members of the press in a desperate attempt to do damage control, and this is how that one turned out. Today.
Wilbur Ross said that he doesn't understand why federal workers need help getting food. Can you understand?
No, I haven't heard the statement, but I do understand that perhaps he should have said it differently.
Yeah, I'll say he should have said it differently. A lot differently. Or maybe if he would have just sat there and to the camera, it would have been a better response than what Wilbur Ross gave. Even Julius Geezer, detached from the real world as he is, speed freak that he is, Adderall'd out of his mind as he is, understood that Wilbur Ross had stepped in it.
No, I haven't heard the statement, but I do understand that perhaps you should have said it differently. Local people know who they are when they go for groceries and everything else. And I think what Wilbur is probably trying to say is that they will work along. I know banks are working along. If you have mortgages, the mortgagees, the folks collecting the interest and all of those things, they work along. And that's
Yeah, they're working along. This is not to say that they're waiving the interest penalties or late payment fees. Maybe they are. But there's a big difference between forbearance on your mortgage payment and actually having the money to pay for your chemo copay or to buy a brand new set of tires if it turns out that you need them in the middle of this, or even to just be able to buy gas to get to work because you are so American and so goddamn free that you are prevented from withholding your labor when your employer refuses to pay you. Man, that's some freedom. But the banks are working with them, right?
That they will work along. I know banks are working along. If you have mortgages, the mortgagees, the folks collecting the interest and all of those things, they work along. And that's what happens in time like this. They know the people. They've been dealing with them for years, and they work along. The grocery store. And I think that's probably what Wilbur Ross meant. But I haven't seen his statement now. But he's done a great job. I will tell you that. Yes.
Jesus. The grocery stores will work with you. Yeah, just push your cart there through the grocery aisles at Wally World or Harris Teeter in D.C. And when you get there and they scan all the barcodes and they say that'll be $172.17, you say, hey, I'm a federal worker. And Julius Geezer just said y'all will work with me, so give me that receipt there. I owe you $173.17. Signed, me. Okay, that's enough for the Walton family. You just toddle right along and. Enjoy those Alaskan king snow crab legs. We promise we won't tell Louis Asparagus Gohmert about them. Yeah, that's... Now, what was missing from that, if you recall, was the part where, and I left it out, I forgot, I regret the error. The first thing you have to do, at least according to Julius Geezer, is when you get up there to the head, to the head of the line, and you're getting checked out. Before they check out the first little package of dry beans, you have to get out your grocery purchasing ID card, because you have to show ID in Trump world in order to be able to buy groceries. Oddly enough, you would think this would bother the evangelicals, because that whole number of the beast thing, according to that prophecy, you're going to have to have the mark of the beast in order to purchase any groceries. But no, that just blows past them. They only worry about antichrists and things like that. You know, when the president is all brown and stuff. Right, yeah. Oh, it's been a day. It has so been a day. Note coming in from Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, is it possible? I'm not sure if you touched on this because of the blatant logic, but maybe certain segments of our overlords are looking forward to the atrophy of federal services, especially services deemed non-essential. The term non-essential is a Luntzian euphemism. Is water inspection not essential? Is food inspection not essential? Is air traffic safety not essential? Is border security? What about ammunition for federal agents? Is that essential? Are furloughed workers supposed to save the aluminum cans that are now worth pennies more because of Wilbur Ross's brilliant thinking? I'm just looking for some clarity, says Todd. Well, it's an absolute fact that there is a segment of, and you know, it's not Trumpian. This is one of those moments of, there's the word, clarity, where we recognize that Trump is a symptom of a larger disease. He is a disease in his own right, but he's the disease you get after you've gotten a previous infection. I think we know what I'm talking about there. And for eons, my God, most of us are old enough to remember Grover Norquist talking about how he wanted to make government small enough to drown it in the bathtub. He said that even before Katrina hit. Oh, Katrina news. The Secretary of State of the state of Florida is now out, is not the Secretary of State anymore. Nope. He done quit. Because even though nobody got expelled from Covington Catholic for going to basketball games in blackface, because, of course, that's school spirit, the Secretary of State of Florida has now resigned. Well, because it turned out that as people were dying and drowning and suffering in the wake of Katrina, well, Michael Ertel, E-R-T-E-L, who, by the way, is a white guy, his name's Ertel, not Urkel, put on some falsies and some earrings and wrapped his head in a saint's do-rag and did himself up in blackface and wore a shirt slash dress, whatever, that had written across it, Hurricane Katrina victim. So he went for the Daily Double. Not content simply to mock, well, more like a trifecta now, isn't it? He wasn't content to simply now mock people of color. He wanted to mock people of color who were Katrina victims. But not content to mock people of color who were Katrina victims, he wanted to make sure that he mocked people of color who were Katrina victims and female. And it's a real pity because Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who only got into office because he weaponized the Nazis and Klansmen and Skinhead and their various and sundry white-wing Republican sympathizers in the state of Florida, he had just recently appointed Mr. Ertel. And then there they were having to accept his resignation. Doggone it. Yeah. What a shame. What a shame. Blackface. You'd think, and granted, it was 14 years ago. Can anybody give me an idea when we're going to reach that point in time where white folks finally figure out there is not any occasion in which it's okay to, you know, go out in blackface? Because there isn't. Monique, meanwhile, via Twitter, says, I'm just glad the Crypt Keeper, Wilbur Ross, and all of their ilk are exposed. Also, why doesn't Manchin become a Republican already? Jesus, people, get in Bernie, and I'm not his biggest fan, but at least he sides with the Democrats as an independent. Manchin's a Dem who votes against Dems? What the fuck? Well, I translated. Monique just said WTF. Well, here's the problem. Joe Manchin, the Republicans in this state, hate his goddamn guts. He has nowhere to go. They wouldn't want him to be a Republican in a million damn years. And the only reason he got reelected was because of just how sleazy and slimy and disgusting and odious his Republican competition was. You know, pill-pushing Patrick Morrissey. The guy who got paid to work for a lobbying firm, and his wife, too, that represented the same companies that actually flooded this state with opioids. So the Republicans don't want him. And he successfully turned the Democratic Party in this state into his own private cult of personality, and it remains so pretty much to this day. There is a little bit of a bit of rumbling, though, that Joe isn't real crazy about being in the Senate, and that he might just go ahead and run for governor of the state of West Virginia, and if he would happen to win, he'd resign and appoint his own successor. That would be a very Manchin-y thing to do. Remember, we have a saying here in West Virginia, no one whose last name is Manchin has ever voted for a Democrat whose last name wasn't Manchin. The funny thing was, I predicted Joe Manchin would do exactly what he did today. Now, I didn't even have to take out the tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqued moons and stars and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby" written in glowing dark paint across the front. I didn't even have to take my magic eight ball with the cracked face on it that says "and answer hazy, ask again later." I didn't have to take it out of the old bowling bag. I just realized that it was Joe Manchin, and there was a chance for him to grovel and roll and wait for somebody to scratch his little belly over in the Republican caucus of the Senate, and so he did. He voted with the Republicans on their bill in the Senate, and then he turned around and voted with the Democrats on theirs. Funny how things just kind of roll around and around and around in this program, because I'm reminded of that Bible verse I mentioned just last night. I would that ye were hot or cold, but ye are not hot or cold. You're lukewarm, and so I will spit ye out of my mouth. Ta-da! That should just be referred to as the Joe Manchin verse. I couldn't agree more. D'Angelo says it's time for Wilbur and Larry to go to the home. Larry, meaning Larry Kudlow, because that was another moment of weirdness on this bizarre thorn in the side Thursday. Oh, yes, it certainly was. This was the Thursday in which pretty much the entire Trump administration proved that they're disconnected from reality. Let's see. Here's Here's Larry Kudlow. He answered a question and apparently was feeling a little bit snippy about it. But he was asked about people who were working without pay, and suddenly he promoted all of them to Tennesseans because they're all just volunteers.
They're coming out, workers, they're showing up.
That's not volunteering if you're forced to work without pay and you show up, you lose your job. So that's not volunteering.
You hear that? That's not volunteering. If they have to show up even though they're not getting paid and they get fired if they don't show up, that ain't volunteering. And I don't know if maybe Larry had a few drinks with lunch, but he doesn't sound like he's in the best of shape.
You know what? I'm not even going to go there. You know what I'm saying. It's very clear. And you know what else? With respect to people who do have financial hardships, as someone was asking, they are coming to work and giving them the same 24/7 work they always did. And I will say to you, whatever semantic game you think you're going to play with me, and I'm usually an easygoing guy,
well, I'm usually an easygoing guy, yes. I definitely am. Very, very easygoing. You're playing semantic games with me. Saying that having to show up or lose your job is not volunteering is not semantics. It's not potato, potato, tomato, tomato. It's the difference between being compelled to labor and offering to do some at your own convenience. The former is not volunteering. That's called involuntary servitude, and it is fucking banned under the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States unless someone has been duly and properly convicted of a crime, which none of these people have been.
Give them credit. Okay, they honor us. They honor us by their service. I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean that sincerely. They honor us. Democrats have shut government down. You know what I'm saying.
You lions. Democrats have shut the government down. What the hell ever happened to do?
I'll shut the government down. I'll take responsibility for it. I'll wear the mantle of the shutdown. I don't mind.
What the hell ever happened to that?
They honor us. And they do it because of their love for the country and the office of the presidency, and presumably their allegiance to President Trump, but whatever, they're doing it.
Because of their allegiance to President Trump. Did somebody put the bad acid in the executive branch water supply this morning or something? Jesus. Monique says, rumor was he enjoyed the nose candy for years. Maybe that's caught up. Adderall, Monique, he's a speed freak. I mean, there's testimonial evidence of a sort to that fact. So that was Larry Kudlow. Yeah, all right. There's one more of these. This one's not all nasty and stuff. This is actually something vaguely reminiscent of a great moment in Senate oratory. It involves what's this? Steve in New York says. Thank you. I agree. Steve in New York says, in regard to Larry Kudlow, I'd like to hear from Professor Spicoli. Yes, do let's check in with Professor Spicoli.
You dick!
Professor Spicoli, what do you think of Wilbur Ross, since you're opining?
You dick!
Doesn't really work with Laura Trump, though, does it?
You dick!
Well, I guess it does. Mm-hmm. But Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado had about all he could stood from Texas Senator and possessor of a shiny, no, it's not shiny, but a brand new Saddam Hussein-style beard, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Rafaelito, being completely unaware that other members of the Senate know the meaning of the word hypocrite, took to the well of the Senate to upbraid the Democrats for not opening the government. Didn't go well for him.
Only thing that is necessary to pass a clean bill paying the salaries of every man and woman in the Coast Guard is for the Democratic senators to withdraw their objection. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Senator from Colorado.
Madam President, I seldom, as you know, rise on this floor to contradict somebody on the other side. I've worked very hard over the years to work in a bipartisan.
By the way, this is Michael Bennett of Colorado. He's a Democrat. And he's clearly pretty uncomfortable with what he knows he's about to say. But sometimes when you listen to a smarmy, oily, odious, self-aggrandizing hypocrite like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, you can't resist it when it's in you, as Robert Frost said, when it's in you and it's in the situation.
Democratic senators to withdraw their objection. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Senator from Colorado.
Madam President, I seldom, as you know, rise on this floor to contradict somebody on the other side. I've worked very hard over the years to work in a bipartisan way with the presiding officer, with my Republican colleagues, but these crocodile tears that the senator from Texas is crying for first responders are too hard for me to take. They're too hard for me to take. Because when the senator from Texas shut this government down in 2013, my state was flooded. It was underwater. People were killed.
Preach.
People's houses were destroyed. Their small businesses were ruined forever. And because of the senator from Texas, this government was shut down. For politics.
Just a reminder, we're so much more civilized now. 150 years ago, Michael Bennett would have taken his walking stick and gone over and beaten the living shit out of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. We used to be not quite so civil 155, 160 years ago.
Then he surfed to a second-place finish in the Iowa caucuses. But we're of no help to the first responders, to the teachers, to the students whose schools were closed with a federal government that was shut down because of the junior senator from Texas. Now, it's his business, not my business, why he supports a president who wants to erect a medieval barrier on the border of Texas, who wants to use eminent domain to build that wall, who wants to declare an unconstitutional emergency to build that wall. That's the business of the senator from Texas. I can assure you that in Colorado, if a president said he was going to use eminent domain to erect a barrier across the state of Colorado, across the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, he was going to steal the property of our farmers and ranchers to build his medieval wall, there wouldn't be an elected leader from our state that would support that idea. Which goes to my final point. How ludicrous it is
that this government is shut down over a promise the President of the United States couldn't keep. And that America is not interested in having him keep. This idea that he was going to build a medieval wall across the southern border of Texas, take it from the farmers and ranchers that were there, and have the Mexicans pay for it, isn't true. That's why we're here.
Of its sort, it was beautiful, wasn't it? We don't hear often untrammeled truth and real passion in the floor from the floor of the most deliberative body in the world. As Monique says, you gotta love that he called Cruz the junior senator. I wish the camera would have switched to that moron for his reaction. Well, they couldn't because his Saddam Hussein beard was on fire because he was getting burnt to the damn ground. I don't know how to make this fully cognizable, or to give life to what I feel right now. And I don't mean to be, I'm sorry. I know that there are people who work for the federal government who are furloughed, who are members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And my heart aches for you. But I'm also not going to sit here and just make up things and say that things aren't the way they are. Both bills failed in the Senate today. Both of them. The Republican bill failed worse than the Democratic bill failed. The Republican bill, you know, with the wall in it, failed worse than the Democratic bill. But ever since, at the latest, January the 20th, 2017, I have said time after time after time, we are not approaching a constitutional crisis. We have been in one since his hand came off the Bible. And regardless of the genius of the framers, and it was a genius of its sort, coming up with the Constitution, they made mistakes. They found out they'd made mistakes pretty damned early on. By the first presidential election that didn't involve George Washington, they learned they had made horrible mistakes. But they tried to contemplate every eventuality, including a criminal and corrupt president. But the one thing that they couldn't factor out, the one thing that they couldn't insulate against, was that one word that they hated and loathed more than any other. And Madison and Hamilton, even though they could both see it happening, even as they were writing the Federalist Papers, they saw faction, what we understand as political parties, as being the absolute monster in the basement of the scheme they had come up with, of the plan they had come up with. Hamilton insisted on the Electoral College, because he said it would protect the Republic in case the people of the United States ever lost their tiny minds and elected a criminal, a grifter, a grafter, a traitor, a poltroon, a scalawag. To the presidency. It has never in its history operated as planned. And so we are at a place, we are at an impasse that is wholly the creation of Julius Geezer, a man who desires to be somewhere between king, emperor, and God Almighty of this nation. And there are about 34% of the people of this country who would be fine with having a God King of America, as long as he hated all the same people that they hate. And that is, and the country has been in a constant state of change from jump. And so the understanding of the Constitution has evolved. The approach to governing under it has evolved. The president has always, almost always, tried to expand the powers of the presidency at the expense of both the judicial branch and the executive branch. And somehow or another, it has gotten us here. And here is a place where there is no remedy against what against the circumstances in which we find ourselves embroiled. Impeachment is in the Constitution, but impeachment has been overridden by faction, just like the Electoral College was. And what terrifies me, and it's difficult to even describe this without fearing that I might be crossing some line, because we don't have quite as much freedom of speech in this country as we think we do. What scares me is that we are approaching a moment in time of which not one of us wants to be a part. I am informed by, yes, I apologize for it, but my studies in ancient history, and particularly the devolution of the Roman Republic. It's worth studying because, among other things, the framers were so enamored of it. They thought Cato the Younger was a hero. They thought Cicero was a hero. Those members of the optimates, the best men of ancient Rome. They thought Caesar, Gaius Julius Caesar, was a dictator and a tyrant, as were any of those who represented the people against the power. That's how they viewed the situation. But the line that extends from the two brothers Gracchi through Gaius Marius, through Sulla, down to Caesar and Pompey and Crassus, and on to the Pompeian Civil War, in which Pompey's head eventually winds up in a box, and Cato the Younger deliberately cuts open his belly and takes his guts out and plays with him for a while until he's dead. That's how you wind up a few decades later with the end of the Republic and the rise of an empire. run by an imperial personage that was inviolate and all-powerful. Along the way, there was a whole bunch of slaughter. Claudius Pulcher, Milo, Carbo. About the only one who lived out his old age to a semi-natural death was Sulla. The bodies of the two brothers Gracchi were thrown in the Tiber River. But all along the way, each one of these people said, I'm following the ancient customs, and I'm just trying to make Rome great again. Until there was nothing left of the Roman Republic except the lies that they told themselves about the fact that it still existed. If I'm right, and I hope I'm not, and this shutdown extends past September 30th, and the whole government goes that way, while this toddler-in-chief continues with his wall tantrum, how in God's name do we make it to November of 2020 and manage to have a presidential election? I'm not predicting anything. I'm simply asking that question. And once you've declared one national emergency, how hard is it to declare the second one and the third one? Well, here's my take. Everyone after the first one gets easier. Until you have concentrated most of the power of the country in the hands of an executive who was never intended to wield it. And then there's the issue, and I'm sorry, Steve from Georgistan is on the line, and I'm going there just in a minute, Steve. I'll be right there. But along the way, you have this, the ongoing witness intimidation of Michael Cohen, in which a president who has long been enamored of the mob publicly goes around making statements designed to try to keep him from testifying before Congress before he can go to prison. Because guess what? When the court shut down on February the 1st, it's going to be awful damned hard to file a habeas corpus or an extradition to bring him anywhere to do any testifying. In the midst of all this, another factor. In the federal court system, or in federal law enforcement, broad universe of federal law enforcement, criminal law enforcement. You can only be formally charged with a crime by indictment or information. The only time you charge by information is if you have consented to be so charged. That means the grand jury doesn't have to be involved. And it usually happens when there's a plea agreement that's already been reached. But that is as to being charged. What of being arrested? Well, you have the absolute constitutional right to only being subjected to arrest upon a warrant duly and properly issued by the government of the United States of America, with one exception. When a crime has been committed in the presence and witnessed by a member of federal law enforcement, to wit, for instance, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. If an FBI agent was to see someone, say, assault a member of Congress inside federal jurisdiction, that FBI agent would have the jurisdiction and the power to immediately arrest that person and take them into custody. That agent would not have to run off and get a warrant. And if you think about it, it only makes sense. Oh, stay right here, buddy. I'm going to go get an arrest warrant, okay? Be right back. Now, all I got to do is find a judge or a magistrate. Don't go anywhere. Keep assaulting that member of Congress. I'll be right back. It's stupid. So the agent is empowered to make that arrest. Which led me to wonder today, how many law enforcement agents have personally witnessed these instances in which Donald J. Trump has engaged in clear, blatant, 200-proof, no doubt about it, witness intimidation. Hint, a federal felony. Because, see, we've got that Attorney General guidance from back in the 1970s in the Nixon era that said, no, we certainly can't be indicting a sitting president. That's indicting, not arresting. The best way in the world to clear up this can't indict a sitting president bullshit, for what it is, would be to arrest the felonious occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and then let God and the courts, well, the courts, because, you know, imaginary juvenile delinquent in the sky, let the courts finally begin to do the work of sorting it out. And hell, the FBI agents aren't even getting paid. You want another funny? You know somebody else that isn't getting paid? The Secret Service aren't getting paid. And they, too, are empowered to arrest a person who commits a crime in their presence. It's almost 100% certain there was a Secret Service agent in the room when Julius Geiser said into a camera with, you know, people, I'm not intimidated. He's just afraid to tell the truth. Ask him about his father-in-law. If you did that, you would leave the room with stainless steel bracelets on your wrists. And I read somewhere today, and I don't know it to be true, that this is the anniversary of that day in the ancient Roman Empire when the Praetorian cohort finally said that they finally felt like that they had had enough of the shenanigans of one, his nickname was Caligula. It meant little boot. Caligula does. Little feet. Got a president with little hands. Tiny hands, tiny boot. And I am advocating nothing. I want some manner, some method in which our system can be made to work. Oh, well, thank you very kindly, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut says, a good word usage, Bob. Sagaciously. Although Trump's daughter-in-law is totally ill-suited for such an adjective. But I'm sure you were being facetious, for kicks. And wasn't it wonderful how Trump got Pelosi'd today in regards to the State of the Union? She also pointed out yesterday, as the featured guest speaker at the U.S. Conference of Mayors Winter Meeting in D.C., that the House must not give in to Trump, otherwise he will be emboldened to hold the government hostage by shutting it down every time he wants something. She's kind of got a point there. Grandma Pelosi is trying to put the toddler in his place, which Mother and Father Trump failed to do. She's stuck having to clean up their mess. My sense is, Trump actually has a grudging respect for Nancy and may realize he's way outmatched. So, strap in. If the partial government shutdown isn't resolved come September, then maybe we'll finally experience Götterdämmerung, collapse and disorder, in this country, to the sheer delight of Vladimir Putin. And supposedly, the Republicans will have gotten their wish. Government is so small to non-existent, it has been drowned in a bathtub. But really? Seriously? As you asked me during our conversations, to what end? What's the real end game here if Republicans get their supposed fondest wish by allowing Trump to shut the whole damn thing down? What will this country look like, and how will that even benefit them? I guess we'll be a loose collection of states, vulnerable to attack by a foreign adversary because our intelligence community and military-industrial complex will be offline. What in the hell are the Republicans thinking here? It's seriously frightening. I don't know, Darlene, that they've actually thought it through, but they've been repeating the same goddamn, you know, if you repeat a mantra long enough, that's the thing about meditation. If you just sit there and say om long enough, it'll become almost autonomic. And when you go into that sort of headspace, when you're meditating, you just keep going om without thinking about it. And the next thing you know, lotuses are growing out of your navel or something. That's the thing about an article of faith. You don't question an article of faith. You do not subject it to intellectual rigor. You just believe it. We need a small government. We need to return power to the states. States' rights. I mean, Jesus Christ, I think it was Rob Bishop from Utah, introduced legislation that would allow, I mean, it would enshrine nullification in the United States Code. You know, the right of the states to declare, we don't like that law, so it ain't gonna apply here in Utah. I don't know, maybe a law against polygamy? And we fought a goddamn war over nullification. Ron in Raleigh points out, Bob, we're about to get our war on with Venezuela. President Maduro has instructed the U.S. Embassy personnel to leave within 72 hours. Mike Pompeo, you know, he was the first in his class at West Point, has told the personnel not to leave. This seems like a pretext to having the military invade a sovereign country to protect the embassy staff. Remember Grenada and Panama and the false flags that were used to justify those actions? Dolt 45 will become a war president. Yay for him. Although they the latest on that is that we have told non-essential personnel to get up out of Venezuela. But yeah, I get your point, and the rest of that line too. Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. But by the way, isn't it interesting? After demonstrating such love and affection for Pootie, such abiding respect for Erdogan, a downright man crush on Mohammed bin Slice and Dice, and for President Duterte tricks done Duterte cheap, he finally finds an authoritarian he doesn't like. And he just happens to be a Spanish-speaking brown guy from the American Southern Hemisphere. Who would have ever imagined such a thing? January 24th, AD 41, Flavio reminds us. Yes, that was Caligula's last day on the job. Not much of a retirement plan. And so that's where we find ourselves. I've been trying to figure out a way to say all this all day long without sounding like I was rambling. But there's a whole bunch of this shutdown business that predates Trump a long damn way. Like I said, that drown the government in a bathtub stuff goes back to the late 90s or early aughts. And the world they want, I mean, let's just say it. That weak government they want is essentially the weak government that was established in the Constitution as ratified by the Congress of the Confederate States of America. Plain and simple. What do they want? They want a balkanized America. A bunch of little petty kingdoms constantly at each other's throats. I've always figured it would happen. I didn't necessarily see the possibility that it could happen this early into the 21st century. I think we better put our Star Trek future, you know, on hold. Steve, thank you for your patience, man. I'm sorry you had to wait so long.
Bob, no problem, brother. I've enjoyed your rant, man.
Well, thank you. I wish it was as much fun to say as it is to listen to, apparently.
Well, Jesus. You know, I promised Karen that I would stay on the wagon Sunday through Thursday, and I had to break the promise today, and I called her and said, Karen, I just can't. You know, after witnessing all this today, I've got to... And she's cool. You know, I've got a good wife. She said, Steve, you do
it. Oh, Karen's an angel. What are you talking about, a good wife? You married up, brother. You married up.
I did, and I don't know how I got so lucky.
No, no, same thing happens to me. I wake up every morning and go, son of a gun, you're still here. And that's after almost 26 years.
How did we do it, Bob? I don't know.
Is it something I didn't say?
Apparently, you know, or there's some outside force that is smiling upon us. Because we are very lucky. And anybody out there that has a spouse that treats them decent, tell them, look them in the eye and tell them that every day, because you don't know what's around the corner. You just don't know, man. But Jesus, man, I'm not depressing enough. Let me go off on a little food porn here for a minute.
Go right ahead. You were about to channel. You were about to channel your inner Eeyore. Thanks for noticing me.
I got some Duncan, or Man Cave, or Sparky, or however you notice him. He recommended some olives to me from an establishment called Granzella's. They're green olives, and my gosh, Bob, they are every bit as good as that kraut that I gave you the day we crossed paths.
Wowzer.
I mean, even the brine is good. Now, I don't know if it has probiotic effects or not, but it's so good, who cares, you know?
Oh, and you know, that kraut, yeah. I ordered a second jar.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you, but these olives, man, we started on them. Before we know them, it's like we were popping popcorn, and they have pits, so you got to be careful. Before I knew it, the jar was gone, and it was like an hour later.
Are they the real bright green ones? Are they the what do they call those, Castelvetrano?
You know, I really don't know to give you an honest.
Or are they kind of an army olive drab?
I want to say, and Duncan, please correct me on this. I want to say they're more of an army olive drab.
Well, then, how long can it be before two or three of them find themselves floating at the bottom of a martini?
Well, they would go good in that if you could poke a toothpick through them, you know.
Well, there are actual olive de-pitters out there. I think there's one on the ocean floor there from the Titanic table, as a matter of fact.
But he was telling me, Steve, you got to try these olives, and I was thinking, all right, what's so special about a damn olive? And once they got here, they take their time in shipping them. They ship ground from out there where he's at, you know, from the west side to the east side. It took about 9 or 10 days. But once I got them, I was like, yeah, I get it now. I get it. So anyway, if anybody is interested, they're called Granzella's, GRANDZELLA, and you can Google that. And man, if you're into olives, you got to check these out. They are that good.
Oh, I'm an olive guy.
Yeah. And it's like you could just drink the brine, you know, it's that good. I know that probably grosses a lot of people, like my friend Tracy, out. You
know? Not me. No. I'm right there.
All right. But to switch gears, last night I was talking to a lot of folks on the front porch, and I invite anybody that can hear me tomorrow to join in. We have got to figure out a way how to nonviolently remove this orange asshole, because he's destroying everything we believe in. And I'm of the opinion that many heads are better than just a few. And Duncan makes it easy for you now. I know he hates the new Skype, but he can even provide a link. If you have Skype, all you got to do is click on this link and whoop, you're magically transported into the Skype chat room. So it's easy peasy now.
Well, we have a wonderful, wonderful time every Friday. So
yep,
I'm looking forward to it. By the way, we did get off the schneid. We're down to 456 to go this evening, and again, if we could raise all that up, we would have a fundraising free Friday on the front porch, which would just be awesome.
Yeah, that would be awesome, and you know, on that end, anybody that can, I mean, even $5 helps. Anything, you know, because I realize, and I'm sure other people do too, you know, how expensive it is just day-to-day living, and you put the cost of all your equipment and, you know, your time, and, you know, you don't have a full-time job. This is it, man. This is what you do. So, correct, unless you got a side gig or something.
Well,
I'm not aware of.
You know, I've got that job down at the bank. I'm a bank guard.
You do that from what, midnight to 8?
Yeah, there was that time a fella came after me with an assegai. It was about that long. Yeah,
assegai. But I'll go. We'll start out with Steve's $10 challenge tonight if you want to. And I don't even have anything to call it. Steve, let's get the orange asshole out of here.
The Steve's Granzell's Green Olives Challenge.
Yeah. Perfect.
GRANZELL's Green Olives. Steve's Granzell's Green Olive Challenge. $10, and Steve will match the next 10 that comes in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, I'm not
your
very
10
winning.
Becomes 20. A home in the country. A river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl.
And Duncan said they would be good with beer, and he's right. I mean, whether you're a Budweiser or an IPA fan.
Now, you want to hear something weird? Maybe, I mean, you're a brown liquor guy. Maybe you want to try this. I've got a buddy who likes nothing better than a little couple of fingers of bourbon with a couple of cubes, and damned if he doesn't throw a couple of olives in there.
Wow, that's kind of like a Manhattan, isn't it, without the vermouth?
Well, and with the olives. I mean, Manhattans don't get olives.
They don't. Okay, what do they get, an orange twist or...
Yeah, it's like orange peel. Granzella's, GRANZELLA apostrophe S, Granzella's.
Yes.
Because Scott in San Diego immediately, my email went, ding, martini? Did someone say martini? What's the name of those olives again?
Well, you tell my friend Scott that, yeah, he will.
Well, okay, so Kelly's off and looking now and says, what kind does Steve mean? They've got like 16 types.
I'll have to go grab the bottle. To me, and Duncan, maybe ought to fill you in better tomorrow when he's hosting the porch. Let me go get the bottle. Hope I don't lose you.
I'm right here. We'll just play some music. Na 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 na.
These are just Granzella's Green Olives. I mean, it's basically all they're called, hand-packed. Looking at the jar right now, I could post a picture of them if you wanted.
Well, it's not going to do any. So look for the just plain green olives, Kelly.
Yes. Granzella's Green Olives. Oh, my gosh, are they good.
I mean, Sparky says it's just green olives, but from the sound of things, it ain't just a green olive. Just green olives is what's sitting on the shelf up to the Wiggling Pig.
Right. Or you're right, it's the Kroger. But, yeah, this is a step beyond that. these things will just knock your socks off if you're an Olives fan. Now, if you're not, then don't bother. Or if you're into that salty brine thing, you know, go for it, please. Do yourself a favor. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true.
Sparky wants into this. Hang on. Let's see if this works. I mean, with me doing it, the odds are not good. But I'm trying to add Sparky to our conversation, Steve.
Yeah, please do.
There he is.
It's cool.
Do we have you, Sparky? Oh, I just heard myself.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard an echo. I'm going to mute.
Wait a minute.
See if
you... there he is. I said it first.
I'm here.
Ah, very good.
Now, I don't know why Steve had to bring this up today.
Well, I think it is because he was transported by them because they arrived, what, yesterday, Steve?
Actually Monday, but I was so enthused I wanted to bring it up while I was on my list, so I didn't forget. I'm getting old there, Bob. Sometimes things have a way of slipping by me.
He had to call me up and just rant and rave at me about 6 o'clock at night. You know, I got these Olives, and they're just outstanding.
Okay, so apparently, according to our buddy Dave, they're like a sidelight of Granzella's restaurant and deli.
Yes,
Dave describes
it's a highway road attraction,
a must stop, an hour north of Sacktown.
Yes, in the beautiful downtown Williams. Well, not downtown. It's only a block and a half off the freeway, main Williams exit. You can't miss it. Get off the Williams exit and then go a block and a half and turn right, and it's right there.
Okay. Well, they sound, well,
everybody knows we grow olives here. A bunch of Italians moved here years ago and grew olive trees. We got olive trees that are over 100 years old.
Damn. They knew what the hell they were doing. Damn, man. These are like crack, and I've never smoked crack, but I could imagine if you ever did, and something you just come to keep hitting, you know, that's what these are.
When I was a kid, we lived in an old farmhouse. It was built in 1912. It had an olive orchard right next to it. And my mom and my mom used to do the olives. It's just all in the brine.
Yeah, because they're bitter as hell right off the tree. You've got to cure them.
Yeah. And you got to have an olive urn or something was what they call it. It's a big ceramic jar thing, and you put the olives in there, with the brine, you got to let them sit for days upon a day.
Oh, I bet that, let's see, in the ancient world, that would be an amphora.
Well, yeah, whatever.
It's all about the words. And by the way, you know, I've mentioned over in Fayetteville, we've got probably one of the last Ben Franklin dime stores, you know, on earth. And it's wonderful. They brought in a whole bunch of those Amish country goods and, you know, bulk spices and herbs and things like that. I bought a bottle of hot and spicy baby dill pickles. And last night I just said, well, let's try these. And I got one of those evil little bastards out. And it takes a lot to make me cry. And I was, my head, those damn things were so hot, my head was bathed in sweat. It was a delightful, delightful experience. I mean, there were free-range endorphins running around my system like you wouldn't believe, because, you know, that's what hot pepper does. Oh, what's this? Cure the olives. Say, baby. We're back to that last night. No, not again. Please, no. Thanks, Scott.
And another trivia thing. I live 18 miles from the olive capital of the world.
Which is?
Corning, California.
Well, that's why they're so effing good, then. You're sitting on top
of them. You ever heard of Lindsay olives?
Oh, yeah, sure.
They all come from Corning, California.
But according to the jar, these are all hand-picked and everything. I don't know what that means, but... I know what it means, but I don't know if it's... If that's true or not. We're not there with a camera making sure that they're... They could have a shaker machine like they do out here in Georgia with the pecans, you know.
They all fall. They have shaker machines for the walnuts, the almonds, pecans. Yep. I mean, and the pistachios, too.
But not the olives. Some poor schlep's out there picking them one at a time, huh?
You don't want to bruise them.
You could put a foam, like, egg crate or something underneath.
They're easy to pick. I picked them as a kid.
Well, yeah. Otto just told me, Bob, go jogging. Stop the insanity with the peppers. Stop the insanity.
Off the tree, Duncan, they're probably not that good, are they? With no brine or anything?
Oh, hell no. You can't eat them off the tree.
You can, no. Hey, Steve, you're Southern boy. You ever had a green persimmon?
Oh, my gosh. I've heard Karen, when she's pissed off at me, she says, you're about as sweet as a persimmon pie. So now I know what she's mean, what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll turn your mouth inside out.
That's more bitter than a lemon, isn't it? Like 10 times more bitter.
But if you don't pick them, they'll eventually just they'll drop. You can put tarps around the bottom of the olive trees, and the olives will all drop on the ground.
So what happens if they just sun ripen? Then still no good. You still got to have a brine.
They're bitter as hell. I mean, they're not going to not be bitter. They are, and that's one of those moments where you realize that it's one of those sweet little anthropological moments, because you have to think about the first person, whoever plucked one, you know, all hairy and shit and hunter-gatherer and, you know, big old brow ridge and, you know, probably selling Geico insurance and shit and reaches up and plucks one off the tree, bites into it and goes, yuck! Wait a minute, I'll bet we could do something to it to make it tasty.
Let's soak it in salt water. Let's go to the ocean here and dip some water out and see what happens.
I'll tell you, the plant where they process Lindsay olives is the biggest manufacturing plant, one of the biggest in the North State. I mean, it goes like a quarter mile along the railroad track down there in Corning.
Damn, how many people do they employ? And is it mostly...
Oh, several hundred.
And that's
the biggest industry in Corning is olives.
And I would have thought it was Corningware.
So is it a good job, Duncan, or is it, you know...
It's a food processing plant job.
Yeah, well, back in the day, that used to be a good job, you know. You get a union card and...
I can tell you most of the workers there are all Hispanic.
Okay.
You know, except, I mean...
Well, that's like
it's
Georgia.
It's probably close to 50-50.
And the chicken processing plant, at least 50-50 are Hispanic.
Yeah, the chicken plant is not a good place to work.
No.
Well, I have happy news for you, Steve.
Yes, please do.
Your challenge was met by... Let me
go ahead and send that off, because my burnout ass will forget it.
Kitty in Boston said, for Steve's Granzella's Green Olive and Get the Orange Asshole Out of the White House Challenge, throwing in a hat tipped to Nancy Pelosi for popping Dolt 45's State of the Union balloon. So that got met. And along the way, Greenlee kicked in as well. And so if my calculations are correct, and I think they are, let's see.
Ciphering on the fly.
And there ain't no. More like ciphering on the walk. We were down to 456 because of John. So.
All right, mine just was sent. So
430. So that's 436, and we're down to 411. Once you calculate Greenlee in, too. Thank you, Greenlee.
Oh, man, isn't that spark-up time? Or
no, that's 420. 411 is information.
Oh, okay.
As in, give me the 411 on the curing of olives, Bob.
Give me the lowdown. Well, Bob, I want to pick your brain before I get out of here, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You got a little judicial knowledge, and if you don't know the answer, we'll run this by Billable Rick tomorrow when he's here. Did you know that the Senate Judiciary Committee, that are run by a bunch of Republicans, they subpoenaed Cohen?
Yes.
For February. Why would they do that?
Because they're trying to insulate the president by asking.
That's what I thought.
By trying to intimidate him themselves.
That, or there may be some fucked up rule where once he testifies to them, you know, and it's considered classified.
Well, is it the judiciary or is it the
judiciary? I thought it was the intelligence committee.
Well, that's right. That's a different Sparky. If it's the Judiciary Committee, that's Precious Lindsay carrying water for the president.
Well,
if it's the Intel Committee, it's a slightly different animal because they've been working a little bit more along the lines of a bipartisan effort.
Because they were saying today on MSNBC that Warner had to sign off of it on it to get the subpoena.
So yeah, that kind of it's the Intel Committee. So it's probably not water carrying. It may actually be a semi legitimate effort to get at some information.
But, I didn't know if they were trying to short circuit Gerald Nadler.
No, that's the House. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, I know that, but I didn't know if they were trying to get in front of them or not. You know.
Let's see.
Well, it was the House Oversight Committee you were supposed to go in front of.
Right.
But this was the Senate, though. I mean, it's controlled by Republicans.
Understand. There are some water carrying Lulus on the Republican side of the Senate Intel Committee. Because, for starters, you've got new and different kind of Republican, Ben Sasse, and you got the Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who would, given an opportunity, love to get on his knees and bow and scrape before Donald Trump. And then there's the second most powerful man in the Senate, John Cornhole of Texas. Not to mention Marco Rubio and noted Republican moderate, Susan Collins. Yeah, she split away from the Republicans to vote for the Democratic plan today, Susan Collins did, because she knows her ass is getting challenged hard come 20 after the Brett Kavanaugh sellout.
I was just curious if they were trying to short circuit Elijah Cummings because he went on the TV and he's been saying he will testify one way or the other. You know, we will do whatever. And I'm wondering why they're.
But it doesn't really short circuit him because the House is not beholden to the Senate nor vice versa for who they call to testify. They could both do it.
Even if the Senate got a hold of his testimony and said, "Oh, this is classified." Blah, blah, blah.
The Senate has no hold, no sway, no power whatsoever over the House.
Perfect, perfect. Thanks for your answer, Bob. I knew you could help me out with that.
Oh, my pleasure.
Because I was just wondering what was their motive for doing that.
Well, I suspect that Warner and Thom Tillis from North Carolina are trying to work together a little bit.
Interesting. So, how did your guy from West Virginia? I missed a lot of that. What happened today when they voted on that?
Well, they put the Republican motion forward, or the Republican legislation forward, and Joe put his knee pads on and got down and did for Mitch McConnell what apparently Mrs. McConnell won't do.
Jesus
and then
Christ.
They put the Democratic plan forward, and Joe voted for that, too. But because Joe voted for it,
Julius Geezer then said, see, more and more Democrats are saying we've got to have a wall. We got to have a wall.
Which, Jesus Christ, was his word salad today? I mean, bunch of lies or what?
Oh, he's gone. He's Sparky. He's orbiting his own private planet at this point.
Well, I know, but I mean, it was just... I'm about ready to kick in the TV or whatever.
Oh, yeah, go Elvis
computer
on it,
screen,
yeah.
And I was watching on the guy's dumber than dog shit.
Let's see. Here's a... I think I got the audio here. Yeah, this is pretty good. I mean, pretty good from the standpoint of it's an interesting soundbite. It's not pretty good in the from the standpoint of, oh, this is good for America. Not even.
Well, one of the ideas
with the 2.5 million jobs plus,
wait,
and it
hold
looks
on.
Like plus, they were shocked and they were stunned and they were trying to defend it and they.
I don't know where that came from.
God, his voice is like nails on a fucking chalkboard, man.
Well, I got a it's that damned auto run audio drives me crazy. So we'll try to get that back.
Yeah, it always drives me crazy. You're trying to read a story and then audio comes on.
No, it just makes
yeah,
it makes you
have three or four different ads going. Yeah, you'll get a Nike commercial or something going on, you know, out from left field. Like, what the fuck? What is this?
Let's see if we have a look. This. Okay, let's try this again.
Roll tape. You're in your questions first. So here it is.
Well, one of the ideas suggested is they open it, they pay a sort of a prorated down payment for the wall, which I think people will agree that you need the wall. In fact, I see a lot of the Democrats are almost all of them are breaking saying, look, walls are good. Big difference from what you had 2 or 3 weeks ago. And we had the vote on our bill, which we won 50-47. That was our bill, but we got one.
Yeah, you didn't win that, dummy. You needed 60.
60. He doesn't know how this works. None
right.
Of it.
And all those Democrats who are saying we need a wall, that's the people who are around him who are trying to keep him from tearing his clothes off and running out in the yard and playing with himself. Oh, no, sir, no. They're coming around to you. They're coming around to you, sir. Oh, good. There are no Democrats who said, oh, a wall would be good. I mean, maybe Tulsi Gabbard did. I don't know.
Just like he tried to bully his way onto the State of the Union in the House. And Nancy's like, no, you can't. You know, not without a concurrent resolution. He does not have a clue how this works. We have such a dumbass as president right now. And that's one of the things.
Polls are out that 70% of the people in the United States don't want the damn wall.
Yeah, it's that. And his approve, disapprove numbers, wall. His approve is down to 34%. I mean, he's down to nothing but the maggots. And he's hemorrhaged like 8-9 points since December.
And he's losing more maggots every day.
And there's 800,000 people that are not getting paid. Imagine that. And these are air traffic controllers. All you got now is frontline defenses. You know, they usually have a dark room, people in the back that oversee the people in the front. They're not there. There's usually people on the ground, you know, and you've seen them with their head muffs. They may still be there. I'm not sure, but I have heard they're not there. So all you got
just
now,
shut down the
all you got
all,
now
all is, flights like they did on 9/11.
Right. All you
shut
got
it,
now,
shut it down.
All you got now
nobody
is
nobody flies.
And these guys are pissed off
it'll
and
be,
they're worried
it'll
about
be
their bills
in hours.
Yeah, how about say shut down the Atlanta Hartsfield Jackson International Airport
for the Super Bowl. Have you heard they're telling people to arrive 24 hours earlier and just wander around the airport?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you want to go to the Super Bowl. Jesus, I'm a sports fan, but not that big a one, you know.
Oh, I bet you the NFL was on Trump's case. Robert Kraft probably called him up and said, you dumb son of a bitch, open up the government.
But they're buddies, Duncan.
I know, but yeah. Who else is he going to listen to? I mean, Robert Kraft is another billionaire. He's got millions to lose off this deal.
But honestly, it's not funny. Look at a map of all the air travel that's over us right now, currently. Somewhere over you, there's a plane.
Yeah,
nobody's safe.
Flight tracker.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody is safe, and it's going to take a tragedy before these fools turn this ship around, man. And I'm not, when I say fools, I'm referring to Trump and his cabal. I'm so sick of this both-siderism bullshit because Trump is the one that came out and said, I'll take the mantle. It's mine.
Well, pray God there isn't some national horror because the multimillionaire for-profit media will immediately revert to, well, this is the fault of both sides.
Oh, they're already doing it, Bob. Hell, they've been doing it since the Reagan age, and it's been building. It's just now it's finally striking a chord with the masses, finally. And it didn't really hit me until Driftglass brought it to my attention 2 or 3 years ago. And I've been screaming it against the wind. And I'm sure you've noticed it too, Bob, and probably you too, Duncan. But I am so sick of this both-siderism shit. It's got to stop. The foolishness all
starts. Well, it's not gonna because that's what is making the money for the multimillionaire for-profit media. Please understand that they do it because it's a big dollar.
And they want to draw both sides in, so you'll tune in every Sunday to meet the fucking press with Chuck Toad and his ilk, you know?
It's a big dollar. That's it. But in all seriousness, go out and read the hand-wringing, pearl-clutching mea culpas over the Covington Catholic story. It's sickening.
Oh, I'm so sick of that story.
Well, I'm sick of the story, but now you've got people over at the Atlantic saying, well, I watched the whole video and I realized I was wrong. Well, at what point does a bunch of rotten, spoiled boys going to D.C. to declare that women's constitutional rights have to be taken away, exonerate them at all? Because none of this happens if they don't do that. Period. And the fact that the Hoteps were assholes, I guess, no, and you know, I wouldn't know about the Hoteps if I hadn't been to D.C. a bunch of times working on the AIC Act. And I'll bet you these were the same Hoteps that are out there shrieking and hollering outside the Chinatown Metro station on bright, sunny afternoons. Because I've seen them a bunch. And they're odious and obnoxious and, well, as obnoxious as any proselytizing religious types are. So they got into it with the privileged, entitled white kids. And then the white kids did their cultural appropriation dance. And these people who are all both-siderisming now. I'm like, well, I mean, they weren't, the boys weren't horrible. And it's sickening. It's so bad that the Catholic bishops in Lexington, Kentucky, I think today or yesterday, declared that wearing a red MAGA hat is not consistent with the church's teachings on the value of human life. Because it is so blatantly anti anybody who isn't white folks. So we got that going.
could trace the trail back. This goes all the way back. Bosiderism, Thomas Friedman. I can't think of the woman's name now that they need to keep out of the liquor cabinet. It's
oh, Peggy Nooner. The minute you said out of the liquor cabinet, I knew you were talking about Peggy Nooner.
Yeah, her. She wrote the op-ed of how the Iraq war was justified, you know. Bullshit. She's on there preaching this Bosiderism every Sunday. And we're being gaslighted by these people, Bob.
Well, at some point in time, somebody's going to figure out, and I mean somebody inside the multimillionaire for-profit media, that the job entrusted to the Fourth Estate by the Constitution, the only actual industry that's mentioned as part of a constitutional amendment, a free press, that there's more to it than just putting up horse race stories and talking and giving some sort of bizarre equal time to each side, and then declaring a pox on both their houses and heading off for a 12 martini lunch. But that doesn't appear to be any time in the future. I mean, did both sides intimidate Michael Cohen? Did both sides have a meeting in the White House with two of the most high exalted mucky mucks of the Russian Federation this side of Vlad Putin? Did both sides sit down and have a meeting, multiple meetings with Putin, and tear up the interpreter's notes every time? Did both sides do that? Well, given half an opportunity, the multimillionaire for-profit media will probably tell you that it did. So we've got that.
That's just straight. And here's an interesting stat that was released by, I think, the Washington Post today. They counted Trump's lies. And would you believe, since he's been inaugurated, I'm going to throw it out there. I'm just going to give you a guess first. And since he was inaugurated, how many lies do you think he's told? Some poor son of a bitch actually had to sit down and count all of his lies.
Oh, what, 15,000?
No,
it's over 8,000.
It's over 8,000, and 6,000 were within the last 2 years. So he knew when he got away with the first 6,000, or the first 2,000, excuse me, he could just, you know, shit, man, open the floodgates. I'm just going to say whatever comes out of my ass, you know.
Oh, yeah. What was the thing with the women who were bound with electrical tape and hauled across the river to be turned into sex slaves?
I think he's watching Soldado or those movies. He's been watching movies or something.
But my God, 8,000 lies. And I was listening to Washington Journal today, and all they got to come back is, well, if you want to keep your health insurance, that shit. You know, which was a poison pill that was taken advantage of by some dickhead in the Senate to make Obama look like a liar. That's all they got. They try to justify 8,000 against one. I'm telling you, we're in a hell of a mess, and I don't know what the solution is.
Oh, I know, but remember, Precious Lindsay is going to reopen the investigations into Hillary Clinton and finally get to the bottom of all of this.
Oh, yeah, it came to me. It's Marco Rubio that put the poison pill in that destroyed Obamacare. And you can go back and research this. Don't take my word for it. Into some unrelated legislation that had nothing to do with Obamacare, but he put a poison pill in that stated that they would not be able to reimburse insurance companies until they got enough signatures on there to make it semi-profitable for the insurance companies. And that's how they blew it up. I hope I don't sound like I'm rambling, but...
No, you're not. You're not. You're doing great.
But it's so frustrating. If you listen to Washington Journal, I swear to God, Bob, they justify his 8,000 lies with, well, their last president said, I don't want to sound repetitive, but That's how they try to justify it. If you like your doctor, you can keep him. So no matter what Trump says, even 8,000 times, it's okay.
Well, I guess there's news out that the Chuck and Dave, those frolicsome brothers we know as the Kochs, they've said they won't fund Trump's 2020 reelection.
Do you think he's even going to run again? That's the topic for another day.
But they also said that they also said they won't fund any other candidates as well.
He hates losing so bad, I don't think he's going to run in 2020, but that's a discussion for another day. I think he's toast. He knows he's toast, and that's what makes him dangerous.
Oh, and speaking of Precious Lindsay, he got a little bit laughed at today, or laughed at. When he announced he was going to get to the bottom of Hillary, probably ought not put it that way, according to the Hill newspaper, when they asked Senator Dick Durbin about it all, he said, he started laughing and compared them to the thrilling days of yesteryear. This is going to be like the History Channel, it turns out. Instead of taking a look at the current issues, Lindsey Graham wants to go back and answer important questions about the Bermuda Triangle and Hillary Clinton. Then he added, maybe he's going to want to ask questions of former President Jimmy Carter next.
My God, let's investigate the Hindenburg and why it went down.
And Sheldon Whitehouse said, hey, maybe we need to investigate Benghazi some more.
Jesus. Well, Bob, I've been on here much longer than I anticipated, so I'm going to get out and give somebody else a chance to get on the air.
All right, well, you're groovy. All right, man. Y'all enjoy the olives. I'm going to be looking them up. That looks like I need a jar.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to straighten this out for me, because I could not understand why the Republican Judiciary Committee, why they
intel.
The olives are cheap, Bob. It's the shipping that kills you.
Oh, I imagine so. Yeah.
That's it. Would pay to get two or three jars, because the shipping isn't much more.
Yeah, see, about the best olives I get around here, and they also come from out there, are the Mazzetta brand. They're pretty respectable.
Yep. But the shipping on two jars was the same as one, so to me it was a no-brainer, just because, like Duncan said, the olives themselves aren't that expensive. And it came in this huge, huge box. I mean, for two little jars of olives packed with peanuts, but that's okay.
And wrapped with bubble wrap. You got to remember that.
Wrapped with bubble wrap. But I got enough peanuts. If I want to reship Duncan some whatever, I got enough peanuts to last for a while.
Well, I know one of my friends across the river who runs a restaurant over there is right. I mean, they're very persnickety about their bar. They got a great bar. They got great bartenders. And if I tell him about these olives, he's liable to go wild.
And he could probably call the establishment and get a bulk shipping rate.
Probably could.
I would say that's doable. So, but anyways, I'm out of here. It was great talking to both you guys, and I really appreciated the conversation.
All right, Steve, Sparky, I enjoyed it. Y'all have a blast, man.
All right, you as well. Bye now.
See you, Sparky. Bye. See you, Steve. And the lines are open if you want to continue the conversation. You're more than welcome to jump right in. Thank you to Elizabeth up in New York. We have Elizabeth jumped in and said, yeah, I'll meet Steve's challenge and a little bit more along the way. So, hey, here we are. We are $369 away from finishing January. $369 away from fundraising free radio tomorrow and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week. And that would be awesome if we could do it. So there's an hour or so left, and maybe we can finish it off this evening. That would be amazing. Thanks again to Elizabeth in New York. The things to watch for tomorrow. This was not odd, but it's one of those days that doesn't happen very much in Mueller world. The Washington Post pointed out that today the Mueller grand jury met. They haven't met on a Thursday since July the 12th. Now, when they met on Thursday, July the 12th, July the 13th, Friday, indictments came out for 12 Russian nationals. Well, for today's session, a guy named Andrew Stettner showed up. Andrew Stettner is the stepson of Jerome Corsi, who, if you were listening last night, you will recall, compared himself to Jesus Christ. Yeah, really. So, we might get an indictment of Jerome Corsi tomorrow? Other reporting suggests that Roger Stone spends every Friday waiting for the feds to come and get him. Yeah, who knows? But it would be... I really... I really do not fully understand how you can watch a man, and I use the term loosely where we're when it comes to describing Julius Geezer, how you can watch him commit crimes openly and publicly and not do a damned thing about it. Beats the daylights out of me. Back to Julius Geezer from earlier.
Democrat, it was 50 to 47, and we need, as you know, we have to get 60. We don't have 60 votes, so we need Democrat support. We didn't get Democrat support other than from a actually wonderful man.
Really, Joe Manchin's a wonderful man now. After calling him everything but a human being during the election cycle, coming to West Virginia to campaign for pill-pushing Patrick Morrissey, suddenly Joe Manchin's a wonderful man. Huh, how about that? I wonder if Joe was able to hear that from his position down underneath Trump's desk.
As you know, Senator Manchin, and who's doing the right thing for his people? I mean, he's doing the right thing for West Virginia, frankly.
No, he's not, Frank. West Virginia doesn't even have a border. A state line anywhere near the Mexican border. We're not over... Jesus, why do I bother? The only thing he's doing is pandering to the bigotry that exists in this state, which, I will remind you, by at least one metric back in about 2008, it became the most racist state in the Union. He's just making the maggots happy. Because while on a national level the Trump's approval rating is down, around the bowl and down the hole, go Trump, go. His numbers are in the toilet. They're not quite in the toilet here. They're probably still north of 50%. Our great big joke of a governor recently. One-upped those three legislators who offered to, who wanted to pass a bill to give $10 million from West Virginia to help build the wall. Jim Justice came along and said, Donald Trump can come to West Virginia because we still love our country. Not sure if he was speaking of the Confederate States of America or the United States of America. Right.
And the other bill, it was 5244, and that included a lot of hurricane relief for a lot of different states. So it's sort of not something some of them really voted for, the hurricane relief, which they felt they needed. That was 5244.
Corey Gardner from Colorado voted for that bill because it didn't have your stupid fucking wall in it.
But you need 60, so that didn't go anywhere. So we knew they both were not going to go anywhere, we thought. And now Mitch is negotiating with Chuck Schumer, and we'll see what happens, I think.
Mitch. Like he's, you know, an underling. Not the Senate Majority Leader, just Mitch. Yeah.
They just left a meeting. They just had a meeting. I think they're going out to see their people, but they just left. So we had two bills. I think we did very well. The Republicans held, except for two. The Republicans held.
You know what would make this word salad a lot better? Some of those green olives.
Two were not there. They weren't able to be there. So there were two non-votes. But even with two non-votes, I think they would have been good votes for us.
What's funny is that the reporters asking these questions know all of this. He's the only guy on the planet who doesn't know they already know. He thinks he's breaking news because he's got a broken brain.
50 to 47, we won. But we need 60 votes because of the 60-vote rule.
Oh, well, that we need 60 votes because of the 60-vote rule. Who would imagine that a 60-vote rule would require 60 votes? God damn, his mind's like a steel trap, isn't it?
And so I just really want to thank the Republicans for holding. Again, on the other one, that was the opening up. That's 52-44, but you need 60 votes, so it's a long way short. And a lot of that...
He sounds like my grandmother. Not when my grandmother was vibrant and brilliant, but after her brain was gone and she sort of shambled around the house looking for her shoes when she was 88, 89.
A lot of those votes were based on the fact that there was hurricane relief for certain states.
But would you reopen the temporary spending without money for the wall? Was it just to reopen the...
Well, I wouldn't be happy with it. I wouldn't be happy. But we have a lot of alternatives. Honestly, we have... Everybody... Look, for the most part, people agree when I say everybody. I would say almost everybody agree. We have to have border security. We have to have a wall in order to have border security. You can...
No, everybody doesn't agree with that part. Some level of border security? Sure. Does a wall, in order to have, no, you don't have to have a wall. And something around, as Sparky pointed out, 70% of the country knows and understands that a wall does not enhance border security. Because it damn sure doesn't do anything about things that we don't want coming into the United States that come into the United States via, aircraft, ships. Dirigibles.
Not have border security without a wall. I mean, we can play games and we can talk about technology. We can talk about drones flying around. You know, right now, Formed is an 8,000-person caravan. And the caravan is heading our way. Congratulations. We have another one. We stopped the first one. We stopped the second one. I wouldn't say that Tijuana is too happy, but they're happily living in Tijuana right now, and a lot of them have gone back, but we stopped them, but it's very tough.
Yeah, because, you know, they come with those babies. I mean, granted, they don't have any machine guns or grenade launchers or dynamite belts or even the occasional single-shot shotgun. Yeah, but they got those babies. Babies of doom. And they bring them here. And they make them catch the flu and die, and just to embarrass the God Emperor. See how it works?
If we didn't have a wall in those areas, it would have been very hard to stop them. We have the military, and we have the Border Patrol. They've done an incredible job, and ICE has done an incredible job all over the country, frankly. We've removed...
Oh, enough. God almighty, he's nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. Oh, and speaking of driving white wingers crazy. Let's check in for a moment, because so many of them let Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez live rent-free in their heads. Let's check in with that noted man with a voice made for print, Mark Levin, who is now down to, I fully expect him to show up outside Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's window with a boombox on his shoulders at some point, but yeah, this is just pathetic.
So where's all this money going to go? 70% tax bracket. Who's going to decide who gets what?
Congress? I mean, that's Congress's job. The House of Representatives gets the purse strings, and the Senate got the right to confirm presidential nominees and appointments. Who's going to see where this... And by the way, none of these dumbasses understand that when she's talking about a 70% top marginal tax bracket, well, what was it, 1953, 1954, Eisenhower era, the top tax bracket in this country was 92%. That means above a certain threshold, the government taxed you at 92%. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is talking about a 70% top tax bracket on people who make more than $10 million a year. That means you get to pay a much lower rate for the first $10 million, but that $10 million in first dollar, well, we're going to build some bridges and fix some roads and deal with climate change and make sure people can go to the doctor when they're sick and young people can go to college without being broken on the rack of debt with 70 cents out of that next dollar. At $10 million and $2, the U.S. government's going to get all of $1.40 like that. Mark Levin, with the voice made for print, does not understand this.
The Department of Agriculture, the Department of Energy, the EPA, these people waste $125 billion a year, according to the GAO. Americans do not like big, authoritarian, centralized government.
Except when we did, you know, back when we had a vibrant middle class, back when we were doing great things, back when we were feeding the world, back when we were going to the moon. By the way, Julius Geezer says we will be on Mars by 2020. My only response to that is, you first, motherfucker.
2 million bureaucrats pushing them around. So why do we confer health care upon them? And what does she know exactly? Nothing.
Confer health care upon them. Confer, you know, like a bachelor's degree. Confer. Jesus, what a schmuck.
And what does she know? She doesn't know anything. She doesn't do right-wing talk radio. She can't possibly know anything.
Go to the supermarket. There's capitalism. 20 different types of bread.
Yeah, 20 different types of bread. Groovy. $57 kinds of breakfast cereal. Feed 'em!
That's capitalism.
30 different types of wine from all over the world. 5 different types of fish. I can't even tell what fish.
I don't know from fish. I can't even tell what kind of fish. It's just, I assume it's fish. They tell me it's fish. And because we don't have a regulated government, well, it might not be fish. It might be, I don't know, a jellyfish human hybrid that was bought in the bazaars of Hong Kong. But they say it's fish. So who am I to question that it's fish? It might be. Government regulations kill jobs. See, I could do this. And we wouldn't be sitting around going, yay, we're only $369 from finishing January. This guy never has to worry about that. Because he's a beneficiary of wingnut welfare.
Go to the supermarket. Look at all the different things you get. We live better than kings and queens lived 150 and 200 years ago.
Really? Yeah, probably. 150 years ago, no kings and queens had any Electricity? Indoor plumbing? 30 different kinds of bread and 5 different kinds of fish? I don't know what kind of fish. But kings and queens, they didn't have that. No, they didn't have such as that. No. It was terrible, even being a king or a queen. Imagine being so shallow that you measure the worth of your existence by white versus wheat. And this being Mark Levin, you can bet he always chooses white. Really, really, really white. Charlene, the sorority sister from Rogue Island and the Reverse Oreo Cookie Society. Hi, Tracy, says Charlene. Here's a $100 challenge. When met, I'll add $50 more. Someone hand that pus bag a tissue, please, meaning Mark Levin. Thank you, Charlene. So if somebody will meet a $100 challenge, well, by Jove, we'll be done with everything but $69. So there's a $100 challenge on the table for the next, well, not for the next, but as far as the live program's concerned, for the remainder of the program, and that would be no time checks, remember? That would be 39 minutes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Charlene, and the sorority of Leans. Of the sorority of Leans. Thank you. Meanwhile, Lee in New York, capitalism choices. But most Americans have only one ISP, Internet Service Provider. How much do you love Frontier? Not hardly at all. But you know who I love less? I do have. I've got one other choice. A two crappy dented tomato cans and a string cable company called Shentel. And if you think I don't love Frontier, my goodness gracious, I don't love Shentel. It's a miracle. It's a miracle they can run something more complicated than dial-up. But yeah, that's true. Oh, by the way, all those kinds of bread, I didn't know this. There used to be a bakery down in Huntington, West Virginia, that supplied bread to most of southern West Virginia called Heiner's, H-E-I-N-E-R apostrophe S, founded by a long time ago by a good German family. Well, they were bought up by Earth Grains, as if there was bread made out of sky grains, but never mind, marketing. And then they got bought out by Pepperidge Farm. And then the whole kit and caboodle was bought out by a bread baking concern whose headquarters are in, wait for it, Mexico City, Tenochtitlan. Yes, I kid you not. So all of that freedom and all of those bread choices in a whole lot of states in this here union are provided by that country that Donald J. Trump is trying to more or less start a border war with. Wouldn't take much to stop being able to have them 19, 20, 30 kinds of different bread there, Mark Levin, but you didn't think about that, Mark Levin, because, well, Mark Levin doesn't do much in the way of thinking.
Look at all the things around you. That's created by capitalism. Capitalism and freedom.
Capitalism? Capitalism. Apparently he's so free he can just ditch entire syllable chunks from words. Capitalism. I mean, he sounds like a guy who spent most of his life either in a locker in a high school or with the back of his underwear pulled up over his head or getting a swirly.
Individualism, the American people. They're about government, government, power, power, edicts, fiats. That's what she's all about.
Fiats, well, as long as it's not Reynaud's or Peugeot's or... Yeah. Jesus. Irish Dave asking. But Mark, how many kinds of romaine lettuce are there?
Just the kind with the poo on it. Because free market. And they don't even charge you for the poo molecules. Capitalism. Capitalism.
Oh, for the halcyon days when people said the whole word. Capitalism. But no. See, Mark seems to be poor guy, seems to be of the opinion that the United States government's going to go into the bread baking and fish catching business if we start making the billionaires actually pay for all the work that we do to carry their dead asses on our broken backs. I mean, think of all the things. The roads, the highways, the distribution systems. Yeah, you get to participate in it because you get to go to the store and look at those 19 different kinds of bread. And those 5 different kinds of fish. I can't tell from fish. But the people who really benefit from it are the people who profit by it. As far back as the early 1900s, Smedley Butler realized when he was posted to Nicaragua to make Central America safe for United Fruit, that he was an enforcer as a member of the United States military and a member of the United States Marine Corps. He was an enforcer for corporate America, which was just a little bitty baby back then. The military primarily exists not to protect our freedom, but to protect the interests of corporate America. So there's that. The highways and the air traffic system exist not for you, not for me, but to protect, but to provide a service by which the billionaire class can make fucking money. The billionaires want clean water too. The billionaires live where the air is fit to breathe. Old Wilbur Ross may have gotten 12 people killed at Sago, but he, by God, didn't live where people have to deal with the filthy output of a place like Sago. Because the people who live here, where I live, we're expendable in the grand capitalist scheme of things because we're not making money for the shareholders. Unless it's by our labor. Yeah, as Irish Dave points out, come on, Bob, freeways ain't free. I know. Jesus. And all of this is about his sad, sick fetish for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
And Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, please come on my Fox show on Sunday. I want to talk to you. I want to talk to you about capitalism versus Marxism and socialism. I want to talk to you about some of your ideas. I know you go to these slobbering interviews and so forth.
Because that would really, really make me want to go on the Mark Levin voice made for print program. A reference to...
You go on these slobbering interviews.
Oh, you can hope. What a schmuck. And he wants to talk to her about Marxism and socialism? To what? Teach her things that she already knows? Because I dare say... that in her studies at Boston University, she probably studied with professors who have a far greater grasp on Marxism, Das Kapital, the Communist Manifesto, the Frankfurt School, Hegel. Yeah. Because all Mark Levin... Yeah, you realize who gave Mark Levin his start? Yeah, the oxymoron, Flush Flemball. And then he wingnut welfared his way over onto Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. These slobbering interviews. Where were we?
I promise to be respectful, have enough guts and enough intelligence, because my theory...
Oh, he's going to be respectful. After that slobbering interview comment, he's going to be respectful. Why would she ever take that bait? You know, just because she's young doesn't mean that her time, like I refer to at the end of the program every evening, isn't precious and finite. Why would you let a time vampire like Mark Levin just sink his fangs into your being and suck out the precious finite time you have on this planet? What is to be gained by talking to a Mark Levin? The only thing you can do with Mark Levin is deconstruct his manifest ignorance, as I'm doing here.
Sean Hannity is this. She is a media creation. That's all she is. And let some conservatives who will treat her with respect interview her.
Ah, so she's just been dehumanized. She's not even a real functioning human being with agency and sovereignty over her own person. She's just a media creation. Oh, but he's going to be respectful. Yeah, Charlene's right. Hand this puss bag a tissue. What's that, Professor Spicoli?
You dick!
Yeah, sometimes it's just unavoidable.
I would request an interview.
Great one. You better get it in the next 12 years because she said the world is going to end. I wish you a lot of luck in that.
No, she didn't. You lying sack of shit. You life support system for a goddamn haircut. She said what the scientists said, that we have 12 years to get off fossil fuels or we're going to be in a situation that we can't get ourselves out of. That is climate change. And so today, this little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby millionaire, a scion of wingnut welfare, went off on Twitter again. So far, crickets. What kind of crickets? Is there five kinds of crickets there, Mark? You don't know from crickets. Jackass. Because the funny thing is, and Michael Dell of Dell Computing, Michael Dell announced, he's over swanning around at Davos right now. And he chuckled when they talked about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's 70% top marginal tax rate. He thought it was delightful, and he chuckled merrily. And he said, I don't think there's ever been a country that's tried something like that and prospered. Has that ever worked in a country? Said Michael Dell, CEO of Dell Computers, to which somebody who was there actually said, well, I mean, yeah, the United States, dumbass! Okay, I added the dumbass part, but... Further proof, again, as I've said before, further proof that wanting money and pursuing money and obtaining vast amounts of money is not an indicator of intelligence. And I saw, we had a clip of him the other day, a couple of weeks ago maybe, this Stefan Molyneux prick. He's a white wing Nazi supporter. He's the one that had the clip about what a wonderful country Poland was because it was all white people. And he put up some post about the median IQ of an indigenous American being only 80-something. And that's why they can't assimilate. They're just not smart enough. Never for a moment pondering the fact that an IQ test written by mostly white people based on white paradigms is not necessarily going to be reflective of the intelligence of non-white people. Beyond that, not even noticing that the indigenous people, he said, weren't very smart. Well, some of them invented the concept of zero, which, well, Stefan Molyneux used in writing the number 80. Otherwise, it would have had to have been LXXX. You ever tried to do long division or multiplication with Roman numerals? It sucks. But the Mayans got to zero before any other human beings on planet Earth did. Terribly inconvenient for your average garden variety white supremacist scumbag. So don't be surprised if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez isn't showing up over on Mark Levin anytime soon. Now, this, of course, means Mark Levin will say,
see, she can't even tell what different kinds of fish are. She's not intelligent. She's afraid of me.
Well, she probably is afraid of you, Mark, because you're real creepy, and you look like the kind of guy that might get a little handsy. Damn. Just damn. What's that, Bill? Bill in PA. Subject line, Mark Levin. When you do your impression of Mark, it sounds a bit like Bugs Bunny. Keep up your impression. That is a dirty and scurrilous insult upon the person of B. Bunny.
Besides, he's up here. If my friend Muggsy was in the oven, would I turn on the gas?
Yeah, you might, Rabbit, you might.
Would I light a match and throw it inside?
All right, you've convinced us. We'll look for Muggsy in the city.
Maybe it's just sort of a generic voice. You never know. So we got about 23 minutes to go, and there's a $100 challenge on the table. And if that $100 challenge gets met, that makes it, you know, your 10 becomes 20, 20 becomes 40, etc. That's 200. And then, if it's met, Charlene will then kick in another 50. That makes it 250. And that'll mean, I misciphered earlier. We'll only have $119 to go to finish January. So we'll cross our fingers and check in over with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Babala. Well, you know, and I come by my knowledge.
Can you name five different kinds of fish? I can't.
There's goldfish.
No, that's in the cracker aisle. That's another miracle of capitalism. those little tiny fishes that they bake into snack crackers. Capitalism could do that.
Yeah, they're made by Pepperidge Farm too. So now
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yes, Pepperidge Farm remembers. Anyway, I come by my knowledge of Mark Levin honestly without too much apparent harm to myself, because longtime listeners will recall that my younger brother, the gun-toting righty, everything he knows because Mark Levin says so. Let me give you just a little...
Levin said so, this I know. He is in the bread aisle, though.
Sorry.
He had a big... First of all, who should know more about giving, about being the subject of a slobbering interview than Mark Levin? Okay, if we want to get down to cases. He apparently had his train. He's 3 years younger than me, okay, and I'm 64, all right? He apparently had his training as a lawyer, nothing about broadcasting. He was an assistant to some assistant to cabinet members in Reagan's cabinet, to give you a timeline, and apparently did such a good job that he became a call-in person, a go-to, quote, expert for Limbaugh and later, I guess, Hannity and other righties on the radio. So he was in the position that he wants to put the good young congresswoman in. He was the one that that was being slobbered upon, or slobbering, I should say, in terms of toward Limbaugh, toward Hannity. He was the one who was sucking up, literally, to them, all right? But as far as his outlook on the nature of reality, what would you expect from a guy who he lives in a big, fancy home on a golf course in Northern Virginia somewhere? He doesn't go out.
I bet it's that Donald Trump golf course there in Northern Virginia.
My brother told me the name of the place, but I'm not going to say what it is. But, you know, he doesn't go out. He's like a shut-in. All right, so there's that. And he's got his broadcast set up, you know, in a spare room in his big house on the edge of a golf course. I'm surprised he knows from bread. And being a good Jewish boy from Philadelphia, or Pennsylvania anyway, what does he know from bread? You don't buy bread wrapped in plastic that's a week old, that's trucked in from a Mexican bakery or something. No, you in your neighborhood, you go down to the bakery, just like you go down to the butcher, just like you go down to the greengrocer. Now, this guy is full of beans, 15 kinds of beans.
Jesus, I halfway expect the next line is going, go peddle your papers.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like he's a guy who was in the right place at the right time, said all the right things in just the right way, and
kissed all the right asses.
Kissed all the right asses, got massively underwritten by the right-wing media establishment, and you too can operate from a fancy house on the edge of a golf course in your pajamas, your footsie pajamas. Okay? Fuck him. Come on.
Not even with yours, Scott.
No.
That's twice tonight.
If I went to Adam and Eve online and bought a battery-operated one, I wouldn't even desecrate it on the likes of him. Fuck him. Jesus. But
I've got a friend who's the long form statement is fuck him, feed him fish heads, which seems to he wouldn't even know what kind of fish it was.
What kind of fish? What kind of fish are they? There are 15 kinds of fish. Jesus, fuck.
No, only five. Only five. There's 20 kinds of bread, but and 30 kinds of cereal, but only five kinds of fish, and he doesn't know what kind of fish they are.
But you want to hear the downside, Bob? About
that was the upside.
Yeah, there's lots of fish. But the great capitalistic experiment that he so extols and worships, because there's no people inspecting the fish, not only can they be diseased fish that you're feeding to your family, but they can be mislabeled. There's a certain sort of rare fish that's real pricey and real fancy, and it was on the news not long ago. What a lot of the stores do, they take a similar-looking, lesser bit of fish and just slap a label on it with the name of the pricier premium.
Right. Sushi fan that I am, it was a while back that I was reading that because I love,
or whatever it is, I thought, albacore, white tuna. And yeah. I love white tuna sushi. But I was reading, and I said, well, hi, Bob, guess what? Most of your white tuna sushi ain't white tuna.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it is. Soylent sushi? I don't know. Pollock? I mean, but there's another thing to add to, with all those kinds of different fish, you know what else has happened?
How many kind of fish are there, Bob?
I have five. There's five kind of fish. I don't know what kind of fish they are. That was almost Bostonian. Now, hold on here.
Yeah, it was.
Silent R. Lamar says, five fish the Republican Party should eat. Lionfish, pufferfish, shark in a cast iron pan, boxfish, and stargazer fish.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. That's what I know from fish.
Capitalism.
Dr. Seuss.
Capitalism.
One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, and fuck all the rest of them.
Yeah, capitalism is inherently consumptive, okay?
Yeah.
So that means that it presumes that in a supply and demand situation that it can simply consume forever. When in fact, just about everything on this planet is to one degree or another finite.
Yeah.
Because we're not importing more fish, not even one of the five kinds. None of those fish are coming from space. Then the anospace fish.
Well, the Chinese are growing flowers or soybeans on the dark side of the moon.
Cotton,
so
damn
fun.
It. Cotton.
Sometime.
Yeah, it's cotton.
It cotton.
Cotton on the dark side of the moon. And just because I'm a southerner, I was like, really? Cotton? Of everything you could send up in your little fucking experiment, you sent cotton?
Yeah. You wait. Just you wait, Bob. One of these days, the Chinese are going to have acres and acres of rayon. Growing on the dark side of the moon.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just because time is short, I have to thank Scott, and I need to thank Kat, because half of Charlene's Sorority of Leans Sisterhood of Rocks challenge has been met.
Well, good.
We got only $50 to go, and we got about 13 minutes to make it in.
$50 for the month?
No, to finish Charlene's challenge.
Oh.
And then after that, there's like 119 left or something.
Well,
I don't know.
It's still pretty good.
It's 119 if we meet the challenge.
But the thing is with, you know, and Levin is not the only one.
There's a small army of these welfare kings and queens.
But here's what I don't get. He worshipped to a certain extent at the altar of Nixon back in the day. He was just a youngster then, just as I was, but I didn't worship there.
Just a minute. I want to go back to the capitalism and the fish again, because one of the things that capitalism has done is damn near fished the oceans empty.
There you go.
Because our oceans have been overfished, and there are places that used to just be teeming with fish.
And they jump in the boat.
Aren't anymore. For instance, a good example, you remember Thor, you know who Thor Heyerdahl was?
Oh, yes, the guy in the
Kon-Tiki.
In the reed. Yeah.
Okay, so when they took the Kon-Tiki out, they talked about how fish would jump in the boat.
Yeah.
So there was a reboot of Kon-Tiki, and there were no leaping fish. There were hardly any fish at all. And then, of course, there's the plastics. That's capitalism, too. Unregulated, predatory, nightmare, Naomi Klein, disaster capitalism.
Yeah, and don't forget the microbead plastic situation.
Oh, you're full of it, and so am I.
Oh, yeah.
It's creepy as hell, but yeah, that's capitalism. So, it's not quite the wonder that he would make it out to be. And it's also not the only way to have that. But the thing is, there aren't, even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not out there beating the drums for some sort of Soviet-style centralized economy, command economy. But oddly enough, because of the Trump economic policies, those are the guys who are moving us towards centralized command economy. And it will fall to pieces spectacularly.
Well, she is advocating for a form of taxation and a form of responsible, legitimate government and society that I have experienced within the course of my lifetime. And I'm not all that old in the grand scheme of things. There was a time when a middle-class person, usually a union person, it was a one-income household situation, and from that one income, you had a nice house, a nice car, often two nice little cars. You got to go on vacation with your family for a week every year. You got proper health care. You got proper pension, the actual pension benefits. And we were fucking on easy street in this country, in the sense that we were going places, doing things, had a solid middle class, and Trump and the rest of them are out to fuck that system up because they want it all. There are no limits with these people. These are the aficionados of the mindset, whoever dies with the most toys wins. And see, this is getting back to Levin for a second, because how is it?
Well, if that's the case, if that's the case, I wish we could just declare some winners.
Well, how is it that this guy in his adolescent years, I'm sure, worshipped to some degree at the altar of Nixon, and then worshipped at the altar of Reagan, and worshipped at the altar of H.W. Bush, and worshipped at the altar of W. Bush? How is it that now he's worshipping at the altar of Trump, who has nothing good to say about Nixon or Reagan or H.W. Bush or W. Bush? How is it that he can make that kind of a shift?
I realize that's probably a challenge. You gotta think like them. And the answer to your question is because the check clears.
Yeah, but it's not just that, Bob. It's the lack of discernment on the people to whom Levin and these others appeal, that if they would pause, turn the radio down, take a step back, and just focus and concentrate for a few solid minutes, they would see that they are riddled with inconsistency. They are opportunists of the worst sort who are out to ultimately screw them, because they don't want everybody to have a nice house on the edge of a golf course and an old.
No, because it's all a zero sum game. If everybody has a nice house on a golf course, then there's no value to having a nice house on a golf course.
There you go. They want to give us the illusion also that we've got 5 or 15 types of bread or 5 types of fish. And I want them to get to the loaves and fishes trick. We've got a lot of unwell people, poor people, 800,000 of them are government workers who've got to have a handout and go to the fucking food bank. And I don't know if you've ever been to a food bank, but on some level, it is very, I'll say the word humbling, but in a real way, when you're used to more or less doing for yourself, it makes you weep that you are in a position where that's your literal last resort to put fucking food on the table. Okay?
Yeah, I saw a cartoon earlier today. It was a woman at a food pantry, and she was handing 2 bags of groceries out to a guy in an overcoat holding up, you know how the FBI holds up their badge where you can see,
yeah.
She goes, no, we believe you, and is handing him the groceries.
God, and it makes you want to weep that things have gotten
well,
so...
Well, this is the kind of stuff that we used to point to as proof that the Soviet system wouldn't work.
I know, stand, You know, you ever, what was that big so-called department store?
Goom.
Yeah, in Moscow. You'd walk in there and there'd be great shelves, most of them empty, and you'd have to stand in line and take a number, you know, stand in line for hours and take a number for two rolls of bathroom tissue in name only that had fucking wood pulp chunks in it.
Had to be fun. Oh, I gotta change topics on you real quick.
All right, okay, I'm sorry.
Don't apologize, but this was in the list, and I wanted to make sure I got to it.
Okay.
The guy who is now counsel to the president, lo and behold.
Giuliani?
No, he's private. This is counsel to the president. It's a job.
Well, how do you keep track?
His name's like Cipollone or something, or Cipollone. Son of a gun.
In other words, he's in the John Dean position.
Yeah. Or was John Dean White House counsel?
Well, you're right. There is a distinction. But anyway, go ahead.
There's White House counsel, and he is the lawyer for the institution of the presidency.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
And then there's counsel to the president, who is the lawyer for the president. And then there's your private lawyers, your Giuliani, who is Donald Trump's lawyer. Anyway, this guy's counsel to the president. Cipollone, I think is his name. If Darlene's still listening, she might know. Turns out, guess what? He's an alum of Covington Catholic.
Oh, joy.
So, howdy-do, no wonder Julius Geezer declared, "I'm inviting them to the White House."
For more fast food? Or is he going to give them fish and 15 different types of bread?
You know, that's another thing about those 20 different kinds of bread. There's a lot of Americans out there can't afford it. You know, I've remarked on a number of occasions. I've remarked on a number of occasions that I'm really fond of that Gold Miner brand sourdough.
And I finally tried it, and it is yummy.
Isn't it? Well, I found it on sale probably because it was going to start molding about a day later. I found it on sale two loaves for $5.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, every now and then I get a Kroger coupon or Ralph's coupon for a buck and a half off of the regular price, which is not bad.
That ain't bad at all.
But the
thing is, if you've got if you're on SNAP benefits, EBT, which by the way are also threatened at this point, and you've got a little over a dollar a day to spend, you ain't getting no gold. If you buy a loaf of Gold Miner sourdough, that's an entire day's worth of eating.
No, you're down at the fucking 99-cent store getting, you know, generic.
The day-old bread store?
Or there, yeah. I mean, you're down there getting the generic Wonder Bread bread. Wonder Chemical bread. But not even.
Wonder what the fuck is in this.
You're getting the generic store brand version of the Wonder What's In It Wonder Chemical Bread. And that is bread only because those were the letters that the graphic artist put on the bag. It's not bread in any meaningful way. I mean, yeah, there may be flour in it, and you may be able to pop a slice in the toaster, but in terms of give us this day our daily, it ain't nothing
well,
like
no,
that.
Well, no, when you see the word cellulose in a bread recipe, it means there's goddamn sawdust in it.
Yeah, and one of the fast food places a year or so ago got yelled at because in their bread dough was the same material that they make doormats, welcome mats out of. They're like, fucking, what the hell? I don't know, Bob. I never thought
the miracles. The miracles of capitalism. No, I'm sorry, of capitalism.
Yeah,
capitalism.
I knew it would get crazy in my lifetime, but I had no
Never saw it coming, not like this.
That it, we are off the twig crazy. And it's going to get worse because Trump, the more frustrated and cornered he gets, you think he's acting or behaving crazy now? We're not in the end, you know, the end of the story. We're about maybe a third of the way through. It's going to get, you know, hold your nose and cup your, you know, curl your toes crazy. I mean, because we saw it with Nixon, a mild version of it. Toward
yeah,
the
isn't
end,
it amazing
Nixon
that that was mild?
Was popping pills, drinking, I guess, scotch or bourbon, and at dead of
and
night.
And talking
walking,
to the portraits.
Walking up and down the hall.
TR, they don't, they don't appreciate me, TR. They don't understand.
Yeah.
Ask Abe. He knows.
And that was a mild form of madness. You know, Trump, who must do things bigger and better with more gold flake.
Emphasis on the word flake.
Yeah. So, Bob, I don't know, man. I buckle up.
Strap in.
We're in for a bumpy night.
Well, you said a mouthful, Scott. But as weird as it is, it can and will get weirder.
Oh, I know.
Because I have begun, and this sounds crazy for me to say, I've begun to worry about his health.
Oh, if his
diet of cheeseburgers and fried chicken catches up with him while he's in office, the QAnon goobers are going to go out of their mind. The maggots are going to reach for their goddamn guns, and they'll swear that somebody done did something to our dear God Emperor right in the middle of making America great again.
Well, who was it? Was it Levin or that other one who got banned everywhere down in Texas? Alex Jones.
Oh, Alex Jones.
Said that they've been administering heavy-duty pharmaceuticals on Trump since 6 months in.
Now, were they doing that to harm him or to keep him going?
Well, you know how Alex Jones is or was. You could make up your own mind. He would just toss it out there like the space alien babies or whatever. What is it? What are the jellyfish?
Oh, the jellyfish monkey hybrids that you can buy in the bazaars of Singapore.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, they used to advertise them in the back of comic books. You send in your 10 cents.
No, that was sea monkeys.
Oh. All right. Never mind.
Scott, we got to get out of here, my friend. Take care.
All right, Bob. You too. And keep up, keep your sunny side up. Accentuate the positive. Because I'm telling you, people, it is going to get crazier before it begins to get better. Because it has to get crazier to the point of historic levels of crazier.
Yeah, but if you're a history nerd like me, there's no guarantee that there's a better after the crazier.
Yeah, but there's the possibility that people after the dust settles, if there's any of us still around, will say, no, wait a minute. What have we learned from this exercise? And then begin to behave in a manner that's consistent with a world that works. Right now, we don't have anything that works half at all. I mean, we can't even see it works from where we're at right now. And I would like to think that there are enough people in the country who, once the dust does settle after this is all done, will be able to pick up whatever pieces remain and put Humpty Dumpty back together in some form that it's a course correction. We've got to have a course correction, and the midterms hopefully will have been part of that, but it's going to take way more than that. And it's that old Zen thing. The only way out is through. We've got to go through every fucking bit of this. And the fucking irony is, Bob, it was all avoidable. Every single bit of this was avoidable. But would we avoid it?
But see, the problem, Scott, is you can say that about every great disaster the world has ever faced. World War One was avoidable. World War II was avoidable. Vietnam was avoidable. Korea was avoidable. Everybody has to be on the same page of the hymnal, singing the Great Avoidance song.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that.
So, you know, wait and see. But if you geek out on the period of the late Roman Republic between, say, 140, 150 BCE to 17 BCE, what you'll find is that when the accepted mores of society and politics go out the window in favor of personal pursuit of power, then what you wind up with is government that devolves into autocracy and an emperor.
Well, here's my plan of action. As soon as I hang up, I'm going to order 2 jars of those olives.
How did I know?
And then later, I'm running down to Ralph's and getting me 2 bottles of Grey Goose. I got plenty of vermouth.
You live large.
Well, what can you do in times like these?
I don't know. It's just there's a cheap and cheerful vodka out there that I used to partake of from time to time.
Is that the name of it, cheap and cheerful?
No, that's just a generic term for anything that is really good and really cheap.
Is it smooth though?
Yeah, it is smoother than a Russian baby's butt. Not actually a Polish baby in this case, because it's Polish vodka, and they invented the stuff, not the Russians.
What is it called? I might look for it. I may ask for it by name.
Luksusowa.
Who what?
Well, I mean, you're the one that asked.
Luksusowa.
L-U-K-S.
Yeah.
U. S-O-W-A. Luksusowa.
Holy fuck, that's an eye chart. I'll walk in. Give me some of that eye chart, buddy.
That's it. Oh, wait. That's the. That's an eye chart. Yeah, that's good. Luksusowa, it's the Polish word for luxury. And what sets it apart, it is the only vodka that I'm aware of that's easily obtained that is still what vodka used to be, namely 100% tater smashins.
Really?
Yep, potato vodka.
I'll be damned. Well, maybe I'll buy a bottle of it and a bottle of the Grey Goose.
Well,
if you
side by side it, I bet you come back and say, I'm a Luksusowa guy, assuming you can say it, from here on out. Because, see, what you'll spend on a fifth of Luksusowa, well, you can buy 3/5 of Luksusowa for what you can get 1 bottle of Grey Goose for.
Huh. Well, I must do this, Bob. I must.
Ask for it by name.
Yes. Close one eye, turn your head and cough, and ask for it by name.
Yes. And it's a pretty bottle, too. It's one of those classic, it's a square bottle that comes up to a pretty little sort of Art Deco curved neck. Pretty thing. Yep.
Wow.
Doesn't have a cork. It's still got a screw top. That means the boys under the bridge can drink it.
Well, I'll try it out and give my review next time around.
All right. Sounds good. Scott, take care.
You too, Bob. See ya.
See ya. And there we are, the end of the program. $50 to go for the overnight crew. If you're paying, if you're listening later, $50 to go to finish off Charlene's Sorority of Leans, Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Cookie Society challenge. $50 to go on that, and if that is met, then we'll only have $119 to deal with, come tomorrow and Friday on the front porch, which otherwise should be Fundraising Free Radio. Yeah, what's that, Steve from Georgistan? Is that a Luke Sasova link? Or it better not be a link telling me it's not really made out of potatoes. No, that's just what it is, yeah. The link from thinkliquor.com. Luke Sasova Vodka, Luksusowa. And at thinkliquor.com, it's $20 a fifth. Over at my local purveyor of distilled spirits, it's like 15 and change, but by the time they hit you with a state tax, you're around $18. So, yeah, there you go. But that's a liter. Wait. Okay. They only have fifths over there. Anyway, that's where we want to find up. And hey, it's gluten-free. Well, now, yeah. Well, it would be. It's made out of potatoes. It's gluten-free, free-range, cage-free, cruelty-free, vegan. I guess it would be vegan. How about that? Anyway, we got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening, for sharing in this ongoing conversation of some 15 years plus duration. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very, very much. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening in the chat room to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.